This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast. The new episode available each week at thehollywoodoutsider.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'll be your host, as always, for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring interviews with independent filmmakers to give you an insight into both what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. Cut, Shoot, Kill hits video on demand August 8th, and it revolves around Serena Brooks. She's an ambitious young actress who signs on to star in a new horror film with a crew of filmmakers that have worked together for years, led by the passionately enigmatic director Alabama Chapman. And what they do, basically, is they head out to a very remote location, no internet, no phones, and they're making a unique horror movie that might be a little too real for some people. So when the cast starts disappearing, Serena has to become her character if she wants to survive. Cut, Shoot, Kill, once again, releases on video on demand August 8th, and it stars Alexander Socha, Alex Hurt, and Phil Burke. Now, I had a chance to watch this film before I did this interview, and I will tell you, it's a fun horror flick. You know, when you deal with independent horror films, sometimes it can go either way. Either you get a unique idea and there's just not much behind the camera, or you get a lot of technical savvy and not much of an idea. Here, I think both aspects meet right in the middle. It's a very well-shot film, it's engaging, and it's a really clever idea, and the acting is extremely well done. Alexander, in particular, as Serena Brooks, really got me invested in everything that was going on. Alex Hurt as Alabama Chapman was just engaging and had just the right amount of energy and passion, so you don't know which way he's going to go throughout the movie. And Phil Burke is great as always. I've always enjoyed him. Been a big Hell on Wheels fan for years, so it was great seeing him take a little bit of a departure from what he normally does. So I highly recommend checking out Cut, Shoot, Kill. But for this particular interview, I want you to listen as I talk to the director of the film, Michael Walker. We discuss his career in Hollywood, why he wanted to tackle a horror film such as this, and getting his film made. You can also find out more information about Cut, Shoot, Kill at pangofilms.com. That's pangofilms.com. But without further ado, let's get into my interview. And please remember, this is a phone interview. Michael was traveling at the time, so you'll get some audio interference a little bit. But it's a great interview. I hope you enjoy it. Here's my interview with the director of Cut, Shoot, Kill, Michael Walker.
Hello.
Hey, Michael. It's Aaron with The Hollywood Outsider. Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Well, I saw your movie. It's a fun flick.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, well, thanks for watching.
Well, the first thing I always ask anybody we talk to is, when did you know you wanted to be a filmmaker? Was there a moment, or?
I always wanted to be, I think. I used to want to be an actor when I was a kid, and then because you didn't really know that there was filmmaking stuff. And then when I got old enough to know that there were people who actually made this stuff, I got interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew I wanted to do it. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I mean, when I went to film school, but like when I got into film school, all I really wanted to do was, like, direct episodes of Miami Vice. So, you know, film school kind of changed me a little bit. But that, you know, I went back, you know, like, when I was a kid, basically. I mean, I just always liked TV and movies. So,
let me ask you, on your website, you have a Frank Capra quote: "There are no rules in filmmaking, only sins, and the cardinal sin is dullness." I'm kind of curious as to, is that the filmmaking advice that you strive the most for? Do you think it's the most important aspect to filmmaking?
Yeah, I don't know. I read his book. It's this weird sort of autobiography, and that quote stuck out. I agree with that too. I mean, I love, you know, one of the things I love about movies is that there's so many different kinds of movies, and I think a lot of people just sort of tend to like one type of movie. I mean, especially horror people. Horror people tend to like horror movies, and then they get older and they like a lot of different types of movies because they run out of sort of horror. They get sort of tired of the same stuff happening over and over again, so they look to other places, or maybe through like David Cronenberg they get more artistic stuff, you know what I mean? So there's just so many different movies and ways to make movies and types of style and all sorts of things, and I love that about movies. So you know, that quote is always, you know, it is true, but when movies are boring, that's pretty bad. And I've probably been accused of it too.
So is that the one thing that you make sure to focus on whenever you're making any movie, is that it moves, that it's engaging?
Yeah. I would say that's probably true. I don't know if it's the one thing, but it's definitely something I keep in mind. At the beginning of film, you know, at the beginning 10, 15 minutes of a film, you know, when you can sort of feel when an audience sort of gets hooked into the story or into something, I'm very insecure about those 10 minutes.
Oh, the initial 10 minutes, that's where you basically get the audience's buy-in, in your opinion?
It's just, you can feel when they're caught up in this, you know, because it takes a minute or two to settle into a movie. You know, you're not sure what you're going to get or how you're going to get it and how the dialogue's going to be or whatever it is. And it takes you a minute or two to settle in. And then, you know, it's not that you won them over or anything. It's just that there's a point where the story becomes involving and you can sort of feel it in an audience. And maybe, you know, I don't give the audience enough credit, but I don't know, especially if you see a movie in the theater and you're going to have, you know, 20 minutes of trailers before, you know, I just feel like you got to get going. People have already sort of lost interest.
Anymore, I feel like it's about 35 minutes.
Yeah. I just, you can feel it. And it's like, I don't know, when I watch a movie, it's not that I have to be engaged, but something has to capture your, you know, capture you.
You've tackled other genres before. What made you want to give horror a stab, so to speak?
Actually, like, most of the stuff I've done is sort of horror thriller.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first film I did was Chasing Sleep. You know, it was sort of a psychological thriller, and it had some sort of horror elements in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, you know, I started going to these horror film festivals, and I always liked horror. I mean, I was pretty well-versed in it, but I liked other films, too, you know, other genres, too. So I wasn't, you know, complete horror geek, but I was, you know, I love horror films, basically. But anyway, because of that, I sort of got pigeonholed into doing more horror a little bit, and which I liked. So, I mean, I wrote a bunch of scripts that sort of sold and didn't get made, and then I made this film, The Maid's Room, which was sort of a psychological thriller, sort of the same sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this was, I guess you're right, this is my straight, all first horror film, but I feel like I sort of have done it a little before. Because of the style of it, it's actually, I wouldn't have chosen to do it exactly this way, it's just the style of this film sort of required it to be a certain way.
As a fan of the genre, how conscious are you of other movies? Other films in that genre when you're making one?
Very. I think of other horror films all the time. And not just if you're making a horror film. I always think of horror films. I always think the horror films are really the only strain of movies that are sort of, that there's any sort of style in anymore. Like most films don't have much style at all. I mean, I love horror films.
For a director, there are a lot of classics in the genre. And I was always curious when you're making a horror film, like, are you conscious of other beats? Are you trying to avoid certain beats that, you know, other films have used, especially in the slasher genre, for instance, where you're just trying to either step around them, do them a little different, tweak it?
Well, I mean, as far as this film goes, I mean, you know, I love like Sam Raimi films and I love Wes Craven films, you know, like the older ones and John Carpenter. I mean, you know, and there's some Japanese and Korean films I liked for a while. But for Cut, Shoot, Kill, it was basically, you know, as much as I would have liked to have style in it, it was to try to play with the audiences, you know, where they were in the story, because whether you're in a film or not, it, you know, it sort of goes in and out. I sort of tried to keep it as stylish as possible. So it was actually something that Jonathan Demme talked about when he was doing Silence of the Lambs, that he didn't want style to get over, to get in the way of that film.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of that a lot when I was doing this, was just to try to keep style out of it as much as possible, because, so that you wouldn't sort of, you know, like you could have done every film that they go into in a sort of different style. And at times I thought of doing it like that, but I thought it would be more fun to sort of do it so that you weren't really sure where you were in the film. And the only really way to do that would be to sort of take the style part away from it as much as possible, if that makes any sense.
No, it does, because it works. It comes across. There were several moments where I didn't know if I was in the movie or not in the movie without giving too much away.
Right.
So how'd you come up with the concept? I mean, this is a pretty unique concept for a horror film.
I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like the concept sort of, the concept of the actress getting a job in the horror film was like one part of it. But when I started to get excited about it was the sort of crew of hillbilly filmmakers. That was when I started to really like it and have those sort of characters. You know, they seemed fun to me. Once I started to think of those, the characters, and I came up with that story of Nicole and there's sort of a backstory there, that's when I started to really get excited about it.
I really love that there's a lot of acting cliches that you kind of put under the spotlight. You've got the pretentious actor, the actor getting into character, nudity comes up. I'm kind of curious, are these elements,
right,
as a director that get under your own skin? Is that kind of why you spoke to them a little bit?
I love conversations with actresses trying, you know, when you're trying to get their shirt off, it's always a fun conversation to have. and the, you know, pretentious actors are fun. You know, I don't mind. There's just the different personalities, you know, and that's part of what I like about, you know, film sets in general, is that there's a lot of different personalities. The actors are all different and, you know, the crew is different. I mean, I think in real life, when we were actually doing the film, you know, the actors are sort of, the actors that we ended up getting were mostly sort of musical theater or theater actors. mm-hmm. who couldn't have been more different. Our crew was, you know, they weren't Alabama, we weren't killing anybody, but they were definitely more in that line of a bunch of, I don't know how to describe them exactly, but, you know, it's sort of a rough crew. So it was fun to watch those two interact, you know, in real life. And I just, you know, I don't have any contempt for acting. I went to acting school for after I went to film school with Lee. But I know a lot of people do, especially on film sets.
Especially in film sets, the people that deal with them all the time?
Yeah, you know, it's like, it's funny, you know, this every actor has their sort of way of doing things, and sometimes it comes across as fruity or whatever to a grip or a gaffer who couldn't be more macho. But, you know, they all have their own things that they have to do. It's kind of funny, you know, but, you know, actors come off as funny to some people. I understand it, but, you know, like, it's funny because on sets, the tendency is, it takes 20 minutes or half hour or an hour to set up a shot. And then the actors come on and they're expected to do their job in like 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes it takes a little time for the actor to figure out the scene and to do things like that. But people have no time for that. So, you know, because it takes so long to do these things anyway. And it's sort of a natural antagonism, I guess, between cast and crew. It's really hard to get them to interact in a friendly level. I try it every time. And, you know, you get some politeness, but you hardly get any, you know, at lunch, they never sit at the same table.
The actors?
No. The actors always sit at their table. The actors always sit at their table, and the crew sits at their table. And it's generally the crew, too. You know, the art department sits at their table, and the camera crew sits at another. Even along there, it's hard to split that up.
Every set is basically a John Hughes movie.
In a lot of ways, yeah. Depending on the movie, too. You know, this crew, you know, the crew for this have worked together a lot before. I hadn't worked with them before, but a lot of them knew each other really well. And then there's this group of theater actors who bonded right away. And we're, you know, singing at night, singing musical theater at night, and I don't know, it was interesting to watch.
Well, I was already a fan of Hell on Wheels and Red Oak, so the actors already had me sold, but it's a pretty hard vision to sell, and I think everybody delivered. So how did you know that Alexandra, Alex, and Phil were the right fit? Alexandra, I think, really shines here, in particular.
Yes, she's great. Actually, I mean, which she came, you know, it was all through audition. I mean, Alexandra was great. She was great in her audition, and she was the actors that we got were all by far the best ones. Alex came in, and he was right away. He was great, and Alexandra too. And you know, Alexandra was on that show Red Oaks, and I'd seen her on that, and actually, you know, I didn't even recognize her. She was good. She was so good. And Phil Burke, actually, we tried in the script. It was Haley Joel Osment. We were trying to get like a real life person in there just to mix up that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And Haley Joel's people passed. He didn't even read the script. And then we tried to get Macaulay Culkin, who would have been fun, but his people passed it on to him, but then we couldn't get him to read it. So eventually we had to make a decision. Luckily Phil came on because I think Phil's like, I love him in that part. It's so funny.
He is, yeah. It's a real departure from what I'm used to seeing. Because I did watch Hell on Wheels a lot. So, I mean, he's a completely different character, but he still has that same cocky aspect about him.
Yeah, he's a great actor. He really took control of a lot of scenes in a great way. And, you know, he actually came in and auditioned for Alabama, and his audition wasn't so good. And if the casting director hadn't said something about him, I probably would have not thought about him. But, you know, I wanted to use him for something, so I was really happy when I came along.
So how method did you go? Are we going to be missing any of these actors anytime soon?
Oh, in real life.
Just making sure you didn't do anything a little too method and, you know, shoot it a little realistic style.
No. I mean, it was, you know, they definitely got put through their paces, I'd say that. It was not easy. It was not an easy film to work on. Actors especially, I think.
Did you actually shoot it much in the same way that it was presented in the film? Were you guys on a very remote location just to kind of get the authentic feel?
Yeah, I mean, we went up to a mountain in Pennsylvania, and we were up on this mountain in this sort of we were trying to find a summer camp, and it was sort of like a summer camp, it's what they call it, like a retreat. We found this retreat near Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. It was us up there for a month, you know. It was very bonding. Spent a month together. It was great, but not easy. You know, we shared rooms, and you know, it's a low budget film, so.
What's the most difficult aspect of directing a movie like this? The way the kind of movie you were making and how you were making it.
Doing the stunts on this budget was tough, I would say. and also just the time. It's always, you know, this is the trouble with all these movies is that you don't have enough time to shoot. Mm-hmm. My first movie was 24 days, and that wasn't enough time. And then the second two were about 18 days, and this was about 20 days. And there's never enough time to do what you want to do, but, you know, you do the best you can. So it's always, you know, that's always the hardest part is trying to keep these schedules, sort of adjusting your vision of the film as you go along to fit the schedule.
Right. You kind of have an option to continue this film in some way. Would you ever do that? Possibly even take the same concept to like a different genre, cop flicks? I don't know.
Yeah, I've thought about it. You know, if the film's successful, I'd love to. You know, I've thought about how to sequel, and I also thought about a prequel. The stuff about, you know, Nicole in Alabama, back in the when they first meet and start making these films. I always thought that would be fun. I think I love those characters, you know, Alabama and all his crew. And I don't think there was enough time to explore. There were so many characters in the film that it was hard to get in, you know, it's hard to give them all some time. So, but I'd love to get into, you know, Soundy and Shooter and how they all came together and the stories about that. And it seems like you could get a lot out of them. I've definitely thought a lot about this, you know, a lot about something like that. So we'll see what happens.
That'd be fun. It'd be like its own cinematic universe.
Yeah, that'd be great.
What's next for Michael Walker? I know I got to let you go. What's next for you?
I'm trying to get this TV pilot, which is not a horror film or a horror thing anyway. I've been working on this TV pilot that we shot, and I'm trying to get that off the ground right now. That's basically what I've been working on, and that's very different. It's about these young artists living in Brooklyn, trying to make it in the art world, more of a comedy.
That's very different.
It's very different.
Okay. Well, I know I got to let you go, Michael. I appreciate you coming by, and best of luck on the release.
Thanks so much, okay?
All right. Take care.
All right. Take care.
All right. There you go, guys. I hope you enjoyed my interview with director Michael Walker, the writer and director of Cut, Shoot, Kill, which hits video on demand August 8th. Once again, really enjoy the film. It's a unique stab. I'm going to use that pun every chance I can. At horror films, and there's not many original horror films these days. I feel like a lot of them are just retreads of the past, and there's been a ton of ghost stories. We've had a couple good slasher flicks in the last few years. This is more of a thinking person slasher flick, where there's a little bit more going on behind the scenes that isn't just so cheap and easy, and it actually takes a look at people's passion for their craft in a way. So I really enjoyed it. I hope you guys check it out. Once again, Cut, Shoot, Kill is the name of the film. And thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider Podcast. We try to bring you these interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema when we can. So I really hope you enjoyed this one. Please remember to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. Our normal show has a new episode every single week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater or sit comfortably on your couch to watch Cut, Shoot, Kill, buy popcorn.